What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Willie and D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership. Where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, with Adam Vingan. And joined by our friend Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow, as he does every Wednesday at noon. And Hutton, I saw an interesting tweet from you today that I'd love for you to expand on here with us. You pointed out in the last three seasons combined, the Titans have the NFL's worst second half offense. The Titans are 32nd at 6.2 points per game and 32nd with 129.9 yards per game, and or per half, I should say, over the past three seasons. And then you continue, quarterback one, Levis must produce results that finish games, not lose games, after fighting for the halftime lead. Now, Will Levis wasn't starting over those three seasons, as we know.
Sure.
Mike Vrabel was the coach for part of that time. But what has been the primary issue for the Titans in the second half over that sample, and how can Will Levis correct that for the Titans?
Well, I mean, Levis did play in some of these games, right, that I'm referencing.
But yes.
This is the real, I mean, to me, this is the big issue that they've got to figure out, and that Levis must navigate and lead them out of this desert. Because, I mean, since the start of the 2002 season, the Titans have scored the fourth fewest points, and they averaged the third fewest passing yards in the NFL. Now they're going to this new era. But Sunday felt like the same old Titans. 17 points with an offense that no one believes is going to score in the second half. A team with major special teams issues, a team that can't hide their weakness on the offensive line, and a team with a defense that can overcome all of that and put them in a position to win the football game. But the biggest issue is second half offense. And again, they failed to score once again over the final two quarters. And we're going back in this timeline, Adam, 35 games. And I mentioned the last three seasons, but I mean, that it's not even, you know, it's not even really a competition. They're 2 points worse, excuse me, than the 31st ranked team in second half offense. So if Levis is the future, and last season felt okay, considering the challenges with the roster, you know, injuries at wide receiver, terrible offensive line, Levis got hurt, you know, if factoring those things in, there's still reason for hope and optimism, but the time to find out is now. And if you look at the Levis from the Atlanta game, where he showed tremendous promise in his first career start, he's in a group of 27 quarterbacks with 200 or more pass attempts. And only one of those 26 other quarterbacks has fewer touchdown passes than Will Levis. It's Bryce Young in Carolina. So only two quarterbacks have been sacked more than he has. So we can point to the offensive line for some of those issues. And it certainly breaks down, it feels like, as the game continues. You've got penalties all over the place. There's a lot of blame to go around last year. But this year, the Titans are rebuilding. They're in the middle of a major roster turnover. But included in all of that is this big decision for the future of quarterback. And there's really no room for excuse making for him if we're going to evaluate him the same way I believe the Titans are evaluating him right now. Because he's been put in a very good position, you know, in terms of being able to prove it with the help around him now compared to last year, where there's plenty of things that went wrong and it felt like it's not all on the quarterback. Well, now it's all about the quarterback for this franchise. Derrick Henry's gone. So, you know, this franchise first direction for offensive play calling, they've surrounded him with what should be a solid trio wide receiver, a room that's easily five deep, two running backs who are interchangeable that can catch the football in the backfield. And I've heard a lot, well, it's only his 10th start. Give him time. Give him time. By saying this, I just feel like it's inevitable that we talk our way into this another year saga when really I think these guys want to hurry up and figure out whether or not Will Levis is going to be the future for Brian Callahan's offense. And Callahan even told us how he felt about it in a blunt way at the presser on Monday. I mean, I appreciate that. It's just something we don't hear from head coaches a lot in terms of their quarterback.
If you were Brian Callahan devising a plan for Will Levis as the Titans prepare for the New York Jets on Sunday, what would you do?
I do exactly what I've been installing all offseason. I mean, what's the purpose of all the work that they've put in week two to not roll it out? I mean, it's the gaffe that he, for whatever reason, they talked about on the sideline, and for whatever reason, Levis goes and plays hero ball. When you just eat the sack and, you know, punt it away, let your defense go win the game because the offense for Chicago is not going to go down and score. All that being said, I mean, the two long touchdown drives were nice. You know, like there are things in the first half I can point to that looked really good. The third and 15 completion to Calvin Ridley was awesome. It was the first completion of the game, but third down conversion of the game, I should say. Point being, I mean, this is a pass-first offense. They've got to figure out and work their receivers into this game. They have to come up with some big plays. He and Ridley have to find their rapport. And, you know, underthrowing balls, I don't know if his arm was grazed on one of those passes or overthrowing him or sending it out of bounds.
A beer ball, which we learned is the term. Hut.
Oh, okay.
That's what Callahan said. And I think, in fairness, Daryl Taylor, I didn't even realize, I didn't make the connection that he played for Tennessee. Daryl Taylor had the game of his life.
Yeah,
blocked the
and
punt.
He just got traded.
And he played tremendously well, and he did graze Levis. I went back and looked, and I was surprised that Mark Sanchez did not pick up on that, on the underthrow of Ridley. And they scored. I believe they scored on that drive anyway, didn't they? Wasn't that the 14-play drive?
They went down to score. That was the Chickaconquo touchdown. And Willie, one thing I think we all agree on, Mace and Adam, I mean, one thing Levis is not going to do is underthrow a receiver. Right, like that's why
not
I
likely.
That
it arm, is not likely.
The arm was grazed, or he's throwing off balance. But yeah, I mean, I just haven't seen enough with him and Ridley, and all of the off season. And we've talked about this. Like he's done all of the right things in the off season to put him in position now to go out and prove it. And you know, the first result was, I mean, when he threw that pick, the meltdown was already kind of going. And when he did that, he's in his own head at that point. I don't know what he was doing. And no one does within that organization. They're just shaking their head going, how do we lose this game?
Yeah, well, you lost it because you didn't do the things necessary on the offensive end in the second half to win
special
it.
Teams, exactly. Too, but yeah.
Special teams bit him in the backside once again, which was a surprise to me.
I agree.
Teams had gotten a lot better. And again, they could be great this upcoming game.
Sure.
But to do the things that they did special teams-wise last week was inexcusable on that part. We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton, Hutton and Withrow. Let's go back to that interception because the more I think about it, Hutt, I put it on the feet of Brian Callahan for this reason.
Okay.
If I got to tell my quarterback, and I get it, he's a young quarterback, In relation to how many years he's been in the NFL. He's a young quarterback. I get that. But if you got to remind your quarterback in the third quarter what to not do, then you as a coordinator should know what not to do. You should have ran the football consistently, regardless if you got a yard, minus yards or 5 yards, because what you told your quarterback was the truth. Like, listen, don't do anything that's going to cost us the game. Why? Because the defense is playing great. They haven't sniffed an inch against our defense, especially in the second half. Every point that they've gotten, significant point, has come off of turnovers or special teams. So to me, I put some of the blame on Brian Callahan. If you got to tell your quarterback that in the third quarter, then as a head coach, you should think it's third and 8, 9, whatever it is, late in the game doesn't seem, it seems like the tide is shifting a little bit. Let me just run the football and play field position.
And punt it away.
Exactly.
Get our defense back out there.
So we can blame Will Levis for the throw. Oh. I'm blaming him for the throw because you just discussed it.
Yeah.
But I'm also blaming Brian Callahan because if you just discussed it, then why would you do something that is going to put him in a position where he may make a mistake like that?
Well, so okay, I hear you, but I think Callahan's going up to him with this in mind. Mm-hmm. His favorite throw from Will Levis was a pass that he admitted he would not want Levis to throw in a game again. It was in Atlanta, and we've talked about this, Mace. He dropped it in the bucket, and Burks dropped the pass, but he dropped it in between two Atlanta defenders. It was a bomb down the sideline. He couldn't see Burks. He knew Burks was going to be there. He didn't know that there were two defenders there. That's because he had two defensive linemen in his face. He throws off balance, and he put it right on the money. And Callahan said it was outstanding, like the overall athleticism to pull that off. But he wouldn't want him to force the issue like that. And he said we had to reel him in a bit. So I think it's more reminding him you don't have to force anything. Just take what the defense gives you. You know, the screen game is an extension of their run game, right? Like, Will Levis at this point should know not to do what he did. I don't know. I was talking with Bullock Sunday night, KB, and he was like, yeah, he just saw color flash, and he just flipped the ball. And I'm thinking, man, if he's trying to get it out of bounds, he's trying to get it back to the line of scrimmage for intentional grounding or what, like, whatever that is, as much football as that dude has played, they had to be stunned, like shell-shocked, that he tried to attempt that, and then you see the defender running back for the pick six. I think they were more concerned about him trying to force a 15-yard pass over the middle and getting picked off by safety.
Yeah, and listen, I do understand – from that point, what was being
doesn't it
said.
Tell you the mentality though, the offense that they're going to press it a bit with them?
Yeah, it does, but you can't. Here's the problem.
Yeah,
you can't press it when you don't know if you got the quarterback to do that. You know, he hasn't shown you enough to where you can press it. You know, if you have a quarterback that you don't know much about, you try to keep everything in a suitcase. You try to keep everything packed real tight, whether it be in your run game or your pass game. And you don't do things that is going to allow the quarterback to put
Agreed.
You in a situation where it's going to be not beneficial to you. But again, I'm sure if it came up again against the Jets, I think Callahan would defer to running the football more. Even though we look at this team and we say, they got to be a passing team, you got to be a passing team. I understand you got to be a passing team because that's the way it seems like the league is going. But if you don't have the quarterback or the proven quarterback that can shows you can have a passing attack like that, then you got to wait. You got to bring them on very, very slowly.
All right, well, but I see, to me, they don't have the time to just develop him in some slow way.
No, it's not. I'm not saying like develop him. I'm saying do what's necessary to keep your job, Callahan.
Well,
if you got to run the football all the time, then you know he's not your quarterback. You see what I'm saying?
If you already know you're going to play it safe, don't you know he's not your quarterback?
Yeah, you do. You do.
So I mean, for all the discussion about it's only been 10 games. Nobody in Las Vegas was, raising their hand and standing on the table for Aiden O'Connell. He was drafted in the fourth round last year. He had 12 touchdown passes in 11 games. That's more than Will Levis. He's no longer starting. Coaches can figure out where they are with the player. And as much time as they've spent together in the offseason, I think I say we. I'm not saying you guys or me here. I just 10 games to me, you kind of get a feel of what the starter's like.
Exactly.
And the to me, the benefit of the doubt for him is the new offensive play caller, which is very difficult after 1 year to then jump into another one. And this is all Levis has done throughout his entire college career leading into the NFL. He's always switched coordinators. But this is a guy where they've actually put investment around the quarterback specifically, and we've never seen the organization do that from the offense goes through the quarterback, not the backfield.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. We're talking Titans. We're going to play you some clips from the Brian Callahan press conference, which is going on right now. So your first thought, Hut, about the matchup with the Jets. The first thing that comes to mind is the best thing that came out of the game in Chicago was that the defense did look exactly like we hoped it would look.
Yeah.
If you're a Titans fan, and it was even beyond like everything that you hoped. You had corners that were improved. You had T. Sweat and Simmons playing together. That was dynamic, which was what you hoped. You got some good pressure on the quarterback. You had some timely blitzes. It's what you hoped.
But Landry now you got go, a sack.
And now you go from playing a quarterback in his first year to a 40-year-old quarterback. And by the way, there have only been 15 quarterbacks in NFL history that have played at age 40. So you talk about a guy that has seen everything. It's Aaron Rodgers. So it's a complete other end of the spectrum. So it's a great test to see what Denard Wilson does to adjust.
Yep, and I think it's a great point because you're trying to confuse and show looks that the rookie has never seen with the speed of the game, and now you're playing chess against one of the and you're the first year play caller. You know,
yeah.
But you know, it is a fascinating matchup. To me, I think the game comes down to which group of corners goes out and. You know, plays better than the other. The investments made in the defensive backfield for both teams, I mean, in terms of draft picks or money, the Titans have certainly done that monetarily. This is where I think the game is won or lost because, again, I think the run game itself, they're gonna churn it. I think both teams will. But, I mean, Breece Hall is Breece Hall. Ultimately, though, Willie, whenever Rodgers has got to throw the football, can this secondary hold up enough and do it better than the group of receivers in Nashville? And Will Levis trying to, you know, come up with some big plays down the field? It takes a handful of them. But, I mean, it's not like quarterback play across the league's all that great. Rodgers, he can still throw it. But, man, the numbers certainly don't pop off the sheet.
I think this could be a – let's see if we can win the game 16-10. Almost a Jeff Fisher style, and that is, you know, just as I look at it, and I don't know if
that's
you can pull that off against Aaron Rodgers, but I do wonder about this too, specifically. Sneed, one of the things that they did with him in Kansas City, right, was they followed him. They said, oh, you've got the number one receiver, and you wherever he goes, you go. Do you think they will do that with Garrett Wilson? Because that's their guy.
I think Sneed demands it. I think he's that type of dude. I think that's how you are. That's how every number one.
I think that's a huge matchup. I was thinking about that a lot while the Jets were, I thought at times force feeding the ball to Wilson.
And I have some numbers to back that up. In week four last season between the Jets and the Chiefs, L'Jarius Sneed lined up against Wilson on 60% of his routes, with 50% of those 24 routes coming in press coverage. So I think you can almost guarantee. L'Jarius Sneed will be on Garrett Wilson.
And Denard Wilson will want that too. They have the same mentality. You know, they get after it. You know, one talks a lot more than the other. Sneed's kind of quiet.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joining us as he does every Wednesday at noon. Hutton, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Always enjoy this, guys. You have a great rest of the week, and enjoy the football weekend coming up. Absolutely.
You too, Hutton. Thank you. Jonathan Hutton joining us as he does every Wednesday. Brian Callahan speaking now. We'll bring you the highlights of Brian Callahan's news conference throughout the show. 615-737-1025. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.
How similar is that for Will as a young player? I mean, he just made his 10th start, and how much of corrections and that improvement of footwork that was mentioned on Monday can only happen in games for a quarterback?
That's really what it is, and you coach off of those clips, and you hope that when the quarterbacks watch and look back and feel it, he feels the things that we're talking about, which Will does, and so now you have something to work with. Now that they've feel it again, they understand, and then when you make the coaching points, it makes more sense, and then you hope to see it translate, and you work on it in practice, and you drill it, and just like anything, you're always drilling something that involves your improvement in the game. We very rarely ever go out there at any position and do drill work that is just to do it. It's all very focused on how do we improve some aspect of where we're playing in the game, what we're asking guys to do. So the drill work's really important. We spend a lot of time thinking about it and how to implement it. And so that part is where you hope to see the improvement in practice. And then he's got to go do it in the game.
That was Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan on Will Levis. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And one thing I'm interested in, one thing that I am interested in as I prepare to watch this game against the Jets on Sunday, the Jets are considered one of the best defenses in the NFL, but it did not look that way against the San Francisco 49ers. I believe they gave up more than 400 total yards. I did see this stat, which jumped off the page from the Elias Sports Bureau. The Jets allowed 8 straight scoring drives. 8 straight scoring drives against the 49ers. How rare is that? It's the first time over the last 45 seasons for the Jets. That's as far back as their records go in this category. So it's possible it's been even longer than 45 seasons, but it's been at least 45 seasons.
And that includes some pretty bad Jets teams.
Yes. Yeah. The Jets allowed 8 consecutive scoring drives against the 49ers. Now, we all know that the Tennessee Titans offense is not in the same league as the San Francisco 49ers offense, even without Christian McCaffrey, who did not play on Monday night. But the Jets defense did not look like the Jets defense on Monday. I have a hard time imagining the same thing is going to happen on Sunday. Not that the Titans are going to be lulled into a false sense of security, but the Jets defense we saw on Monday is not an accurate representation of what the Jets defense has been over the years.
No, it's not. Historically, and when I say historically, I'm talking the last few seasons. With Saleh as the head coach, he's a defensive-minded guy coming from San Francisco. That's one of the reasons why he got the head coaching job, because he did so well as the defensive coordinator with the 49ers. You just don't expect for this defense to have another horrendous week. They were going against one of the best offenses in the National Football League with one of the best head coaches in regards to scheming things up to get his players open. And then they were down a few players. Mosley was out. They didn't have Hassan Reddick. They still don't have him.
Yes, Robert Saleh.
Exactly. Total saga.
Robert Saleh said today, nothing has changed on the Hassan Reddick front. So it appears that Reddick will not be in the game plan for the Jets on Sunday.
Yeah, so they have to, the Titans in this matchup, they have to find a way to get their receivers open quickly. One, because the offensive line isn't where it needs to be. I'm not saying it's not going to get there, but it isn't where it needs to be now. I looked at PFF yesterday, and listen, some people love PFF and swear by it. Some people just look at it and say, okay, it's just a part of a bigger story, and I get it. I understand it. But PFF graded that offensive line bad. They were not good. They were good at times in run blocking, but when you're talking pass blocking, all 5 of them didn't grade out too good. So they got to find a way to, in the way that you help an offensive line like that, run the football first and then do quick things to get the ball out of your quarterback's hands. Because this is one of the things that I felt was going to happen with this offense. Because it's a new offense, everyone was going to be out of sync. More importantly, the offensive line was going to be out of sync more than anybody. And when the offensive line is not in sync, your team or your offense can't flow the way it needs to. So they got to figure out a way to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands very quickly, because you look at this Jets defense and you don't expect them to play another bad game where they're giving up chunk plays and they can't stop a nosebleed. You know, if you gave them the material or whatnot to stop it. Brian, and this is why I put it all on Brian Callahan now, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I think you know who you have as a quarterback. I really do think you know what you have as a quarterback. Now it's time to sort of, how do we run our offense that can put the quarterback, which I know who he is for the most part. Now, how do I put him in a position where we are going to succeed? And when we succeed as a team, then the quarterback succeeds.
I saw a quote just reading on the timeline. Some of the things, and you know, we're going to play some of this. This is our new strategy. And by the way, I would love to hear from listeners, because we go back and forth ourselves on how to present the Callahan press conference on Wednesday during our showtime is when a lot of the press conferences happen. And I'm curious, as a listener, if you have an opinion, just give us your feedback. 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Do you like hearing the whole press conference, or do you like when we highlight the points and play you different sound bites? We've done it both ways on the show. Today, we decided to have Jonathan Hutton on live, have a discussion, and then sift through some of the stuff. But a Callahan quote that got me was that he said, September is about kind of finding out about your team. And sometimes it takes three or four games, the whole month, he was sort of saying, before you really get your identity. And he was talking about in general, regardless of the team, but especially a brand new team with so many new players, a young quarterback, a new coach, two new coordinators. That struck me as something. I don't even know what the question was, but it rung a bell when you were talking about that, because they learned some things about Levis that maybe they didn't know, or they had a feeling about one thing, and then after that first game, like, whoop. Now we might have to rethink some things.
Before you go on, Derek, Nick tells us we have that clip from the news conference. So let's play the clip that Willie is referring to.
We went around the league. Offense was down kind of across the board. I heard Kirk Herbstreit talking yesterday about how he thinks that September football is kind of being treated like August football used to, less and less guys playing in the preseason. Does that ring true to you? And if so, do you think it would behoove teams to be a little bit more ready for week one?
Hard to say. I know I felt like we needed to play. I mean, our starters played a handful in this preseason. I felt like that was necessary. I think it paid off for us early, you know, in the game, and we came out and played well to start, which was good. Hard to say across the league if that's a unanimous thing that you can make a statement about or not. I do think every year, though, the month of September is always revealing about what your football team is, and it's usually not one or two games. It's usually three or four. That first part of the season, you're finding out what your team is made of and what they're all about and what they do well and don't do well. And there's really no other way to find that out other than playing NFL football games. And even in the preseason, it's not real, because you're not always going, you know, starters on starters for multiple drives. So it's every year is a learning process. Even if you have a lot of returning players, it's still a learning process about what that team, that year's team, is going to look like and be like. And it's one that we pay a lot of attention to, particularly in the early part of the season, on how we use players, what they do well, and what our team's identity forms as. And you hope that it's the right way.
That was Brian Callahan. Willie, that was the clip that you were, the quote that you were referring
exactly,
to.
Exactly. So I do think this goes hand in hand with what we talked about yesterday, that there is no bigger freakout day in sports than the day after the first game. And so there are a lot of teams that will look one way in the first week and be a totally different story later in the season. And so that's what you have to hope for, is picking up the pieces, evaluating what you saw, and getting better. And what a huge test it is for Levis and for Callahan to take steps forward against the team that's still, the Jets are coming in with a lot of question marks. Like, what the heck happened? Like, I don't think they thought they were going to go out to San Francisco and get throttled the way they did. That was a no contest.
I stumbled across an interesting statistic from Jeremy Fowler, and I would love Derek's opinion on this, as it relates to offense around the league. 17 of 32 starting quarterbacks in week one threw for fewer than 200 yards.
Wow.
Man, that's...
So we're picking on Will Levis because we're here. He had the terrible interception. But he is not alone.
And everybody says, I don't care what happens in the rest of the league. I only care about what happens here.
More than half the league, 17 of 32 starting quarterbacks threw for fewer than 200 yards in the week.
I do think that means something.
Yeah, but listen, the defenses are more than likely always going to be ahead of the offense, especially early on. And then it sort of shakes itself out as offenses start to get into a rhythm. You know, I would love to see, you know, a study done on a 10-year period of the teams that play majority of the guys in the preseason compared to the teams that don't. How do they start off at the beginning of the season? That would be a good thing to do in regards to trying to really figure out why offenses tend to struggle early on in the season rather than not. But I look at it again, you know, if indeed this is the case and this is what you're realizing, Brian Callahan, then what you need to do is run the football. That's how you stake or stamp your identity. You want to be a physical team, so you run the damn football. Now, listen, they threw the ball 32 times, ran it 26 times, so we can call that a balanced attack. But moving forward, you understand what your quarterback, you understand some of the things your quarterback can do and can't do. You understand you're still trying to figure your team out in the first month. If that is indeed the case, run the football to a point where it gets nauseating. And I mean this seriously, because then you start to develop an attitude. You start to develop a sort of a sense of, okay, domination. Then other teams that are coming in here, or you go to their stadium, they know what you're about. Not to say you can't throw the football. I believe that because you brought Callahan in, because of where he's come from, the tree he's come from, you automatically think, oh, he has to pass the football. He has to pass the football. No, he doesn't. If you're still trying to figure your team out, run the football, establish an identity that way, and then you work from there. You don't try to throw the football to establish an attitude and an identity. You run the football. Physicality, that is what this organization, whether it be the Houston Oilers or the Tennessee Titans, this is what they were built on. Smash mouth, aggressive type of football, staking your claim with that offensive line, and then working around that. We're getting so removed from that that we feel they got to pass the ball. You got to have this sort of guru offensive coordinator, which you do,
and that's
but you got to know
that's the tough
when
one.
To run the football.
Because they have had that the last couple of years, and they can't vote. They've been under 18 in points per game. And I think there's a lot of, well, let's do something different. Let's break from the mold.
But I'm not sure they have the quarterback to do it. I'm not saying you can't.
That might be what they found out. And also around the league, I saw the Chargers. I saw the Lions. Absolutely the 49ers. Basically going to the game saying, we are going to pound this ball.
Exactly. And those are teams that can throw the football.
Yes. And it worked a lot. Now, can the Titans do that? Are they physically capable? I do think they're better run blockers than pass blockers right now. Now, something was mentioned. I think Mark Sanchez said this on the broadcast. He said Dylan Raidens is their best run blocker. I was like, wait a minute. Dylan Raidens is
Dylan
the best
Raidens
something?
Got a lot
he
of
did
love
a really good job.
He did.
Got a lot
run
of love
blocker.
And when he went out, it did. That's kind of when things started to go south, coincidentally or not. But I do think that I'm curious, can they run the ball anything close to what the 49ers sort of did?
615-737-1025. We'll continue this conversation on the other side as well as get to your phones and texts. 615-737-1025. 1025. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and our friend Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for the pregame show. They'll break down the Titans' Week 2 matchup against the Jets and give you the latest updates before the game. The pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon.
Sunday, Will talked about how it felt like it was the first career game of his where he feels like he gave the game away. When you're going into the next week with somebody like that at the quarterback position, psychologically, how do you handle trying to correct things and not get them to clam up or play differently than they would otherwise want to?
It's a learning process for guys because that's heavy. Those things weigh heavy on you. It's a learning process for me, too. It weighs heavy on me, too. But those things you work through and you get ready. And then, look, sun comes up the next day. You got another team you got to go play. You got to get ready to go. And so that usually fixes most of those problems. But I will say that there's guys that handle it well, and then there's guys where they struggle. And I'd say so far Will has handled it great. Even after the game, he was in a really, really good place, understood the mistakes, understood what he had to correct, and is ready to kind of move forward. And I think you got to be mentally tough in this league to play football, and then even tougher to be a quarterback in the league, because it's always going to be on you, whether you're deserving of it or not. It's always on you, whether you win or lose. And that's a pretty heavy crown to bear sometimes. But Will is about as tough as they come, and he's more than up to the challenge to be able to handle that type of thing. And that part to me was really encouraging when he came in on Monday and was open, honest, critical of his performance, and ready to get ready for the next game.
That was Brian Callahan discussing Will Levis's mindset at his news conference that just wrapped up at St. Thomas Sports Park. Willie and D. Mace with Adam Vingan here with you on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I'm interested in the mental toughness aspect of this, Derek, because that is something that gets talked about ad nauseum in sports. And I'm not discounting the importance of having mental toughness. But how much does that play into being able to actually go out on the field and execute? And the fact that Will Levis is apparently in good spirits after what happened on Sunday, that's good. You don't want Will Levis to be down on himself. Mm-mm. But how much of that mental toughness is going to get him to execute the Titans' plan the way that Brian Callahan wants?
Well, you hope it does. You hope he's able to put the things behind him, correct them, recognize them for what they are, but then being able to say, you know what, I got another game. I got to move forward. I've learned from those things. So that's where that, you know, the mental fortitude or the mental toughness comes in, because there's going to be peaks and valleys in this game, whether you are the greatest quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, or you are Bryce Young. You got to have ups and downs. How do you then get up after you have one of those downs, and then how do you go in and orchestrate the offense the way it needs to be orchestrated, making sure everyone is still on the same page? Listen, you can have mental toughness, but if you don't have the ability to, you know, look at things for what they are, correct them, and moving forward, it means nothing. Mental toughness and you being able to do your job you can have one and not have the other. It's not like they both come as a package. They don't. You can have one and not have the other, at least in this regard.
Caleb on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asks, he may have missed it, but have they said anything about DeAndre Hopkins being a full go this week? According to Paul Kaharski, who was at the news conference, Brian Callahan said DeAndre Hopkins is likely to be closer to a full load this week. Jamal Adams will also practice.
Hey.
That's not nothing. Jamal Adams being able to participate because he missed his first game with his new team because of injury after he waited for a long time for a contract because he couldn't stay healthy.
I'm sure he would love to play against the Jets. That would be very nice for Jamal Adams. Yes, even if it could just be spot duty and just be a role player. I have my bar set low for him. He's making the league minimum basically for a veteran. So temper your expectations, but I would like to see what they do with him. I think he's a guy that could make a play here or there on a defense that has some things to bring to the table.
But if you have DeAndre Hopkins at full go, because he was active against the Bears, but he
and in retrospect, I wonder if that was the right move.
Yes.
But I would hope that he gets better and getting the reps with the offense, that might be the biggest thing, right? Because he just wasn't there for most of the training camp. He got hurt very early in the training camp.
The Titans' passing game, and I've thought about this as I was watching it, I don't think it would have made a big difference if Hop was there. I really don't, because it was more than just, you know, the receivers getting open or not getting open. I think there were opportunities where you had a chance to hit receivers, you didn't hit receivers, or you just didn't have enough time to hit them. So I don't think whether they had D-Hop in the game or not fully go would have changed a lot in regards to how the game ended up being. But what I've noticed is this. They need to get quicker at the receiver position. They have no there's not much quickness at the position with the guys that are your lead dogs. Ridley is fast, but he's more fast than quick. Tyler Boyd is a good receiver. He operates in a space that's best for him. Hop is a veteran guy. He has there's no quickness to him. There's no speed to him. He's just a damn good catcher of the football, and he finds ways to sort of manipulate the coverage or manipulate his body and to find space in a zone or man coverage. But they have no true quickness that they play. Treylon Burks the same way. He's a big, fast guy, but he's not as quick. They need to add some quickness to that receiver room. And I'm not saying they don't have it, because they do. Jackson is the quickest guy they have on that offense in regards to the receivers. Find a way, whether it's 5 plays, 8 plays, a package, to get him in a game. If you watch these offenses around the league, they're playing their young players. They are. If you have talent, if you're quick, fast, they're playing their young players. Look at every team around, just about every team around the league, even if they got veteran guys, they're playing their guys that they know can cause a matchup problem. Jackson causes a matchup problem. Why? Because of his quickness and his ability to get in and out of his breaks a lot faster than the 3 guys they have in front of him.
And again, it's too crowded for him to get in there.
Exactly,
right now.
But they got to find a way. I promise you, if you find a way to get this kid the ball, they put him in a game last game. But if you find a way to get him the ball.
Didn't he look a little slow to you on the returns? I thought he didn't look as dynamic as I thought.
No, the returns are something different. Here's the problem with the returns. There's no way in hell when you're doubling a gunner that they should get down there and tackle your guy. That happened more times than not. And that's something that Anderson needs to address right now. When we set a double team on the edges, why are we doing that? So he can't affect our punt returner catching the ball and getting up the field. But that wasn't the case this last game. The guy, whoever was out there, and the 2 guys that were trying to hold him up, he split both of them and end up making tackles. So first and foremost, on a punt return, that cannot happen. You got to give your returner at least an opportunity to get some steam ahead and get up the field quickly. That didn't happen for the Tennessee Titans last game. I hope it was a point of emphasis, or I hope it is a point of emphasis during practice this week. If you're going to hold up the gunners with 2 guys, hold them up. Don't let that one gunner split you and end up making a tackle. So I think that's what his problem was. He never had an opportunity truly to get ahead of steam and get going. But on the offensive end, you can manipulate that. You can put him in a 3 wide receiver package, a bunch package or whatnot, get him some space, allow him to get the ball in his hands, and then go. Use his quickness and speed to his advantage. They haven't done that. And I understand a bit of it. Why? Because he's young, and he may not know the offense the way he needs to. But give that man 10 to 15 plays and say, learn these plays, because we might run at least a handful of them in the game, and we're counting on you.
Willie, you asked what the winning percentage of a team is when they give up a block punt for a touchdown. Now, I wasn't able to find that specifically on Football Reference, but I did look up what the Titans' all-time record is. This includes Oilers. What the Oilers/Titans' all-time record is in the regular season when allowing a pick six. They are 20-72-1.
Wow.
When allowing a pick six in a game in franchise history.
If you're, I'll tie this into, if you happen to be a hockey fan, and if you don't, I think every sport's got this, right? You will always hear a coach say something like this. In hockey, it would be, if you have a 5-on-3 and don't score, your team usually loses the game. And I think I've heard many football coaches say, if you give up a sudden touchdown, a return touchdown, a block punt touchdown, an interception return for a touchdown, which, of course, the Titans gave up two of those. It's like that. That would be a really interesting stat. If you have two touchdowns like that, your winning percentage over the years would have to be less than 10%, probably, over the years, I would guess. But a coach doesn't even have to look at the stats, right? He just will always say it because you cannot win in the league in a game where you give up a punt block touchdown and a pick six touchdown. You just don't win. I don't care how good your team is. And that is what is almost encouraging about some of the other things that they did, particularly on defense. It's like, okay, they didn't lose by that much, and they gave away so much in that game.
Yes, I have to imagine the winning percentage in that situation is minuscule. But 20-72-1 all-time, the Titans / Oilers, when giving up a pick six.
A pick six.
Yes. 615-737-1025, our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us for his weekly chat about all things college football. We'll chat with Mitch next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Mississippi is breaking new ground for business at a historic pace. Amazon, XAI, Toyota, Milwaukee Tool, and GE Aerospace have all tapped into our deep talent pool, prime geographic location, and welcoming communities. This is bigger than mega sites. Mississippi offers a thriving business ecosystem with affordability, greater collaboration with energy partners, and record-breaking speed to market. Looking to expand? Break new ground at mississippi.org.